Hannah Lupton
on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Hello and welcome to the Lancashire Sports Panel. There's less than 6 months to go until the start of the 2016 Olympics in Rio. We'll be looking ahead to this summer's games and discussing what impact, if any, London 2012 had on our county. Here in the studio this evening is Tony Wood, renowned for his links with Blackburn Harriers, the club that has produced some of the country's finest Olympians. He's now chairman of Northern Athletics. We'll also hear from the former Great Britain handball head coach, Bill Bailey. He's now working with Badminton England. As well as that, we'll hear from Britain's record pole vault holder, Holly Bradshaw, who's aiming for a podium finish in Rio. But the most important member of the panel is you. Do you think there's a legacy in Lancashire following the 2012 Olympics? Were you inspired by anything you witnessed at the London Games? 81333, put Lancs in front of your message or tweet us at BBC Lancsport. Plenty of ways for you to get involved between now and 7 o'clock here on BBC Radio Lancashire. And as usual, we've got a trivia question to set for you this evening. Five track and field athletes have won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year since 1990. But can you name all of them? 81333, put Lancs in front of your message, or you can tweet us at BBC Lancs Sport. So that's five track and field athletes who have won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year since 1990. Just have a go at that one for us this evening. Tony, I shall be asking you that one before 7 o'clock, but don't give us any answers yet. So, as I said, joined in the studio by Tony Wood, chairman of Northern Athletics and Blackburn Harriers as well. And no one more qualified to talk about London 2012 and reflecting back at the last Olympic Games, because from your club, we actually had three Olympians competing. Holly Bradshaw in the pole vault, Sophie Hitchin in the hammer, and Samantha Murray, who won silver, the silver medal in the modern pentathlon. What are your memories if we think it's coming up to 4 years since London 2012?
Yeah, it's unbelievable that it's 4 years since those dramatic events in 2012, our home Olympics, and in particular for our club, the three athletes that made it to the Olympics, and then all of them reaching the finals, Holly and Sophie reaching the final in the pole vault and hammer, and then of course the last event of the Olympics, Samantha Murray winning that silver medal down at Greenwich in the modern pentathlon. And we were so proud of those three athletes in 2012. It was fantastic.
That must be the overwhelming feeling, I guess, almost like a proud parent when you watch that come to fruition.
Yeah, I think all of us at Blackburn Harriers were proud parents that day, and proud friends and running colleagues, training colleagues of those three athletes, because we've seen all three of them grow up within the Harriers and eventually compete for the country and to compete in the Olympics, the pinnacle of every athlete's ambition, was unbelievable. So three from our club, magnificent.
And not only that, the fact that it was a home games on our doorstep as well must have made it that little bit extra special.
It was very special. I mean, the build up since it was announced, I think it was 2006 when we were announced as the winning nation. So it was 6 years of build up towards that, and of course those three athletes were still very young when that announcement was made, and it only became a reality certainly in the last 18 months to 2 years prior to the London Olympics that they may possibly be there at that event. Yeah.
And it was obviously a successful game for Great Britain, London 2012. We won 65 medals, 29 of them bronze, finishing third in the medal table overall. But in terms of Blackburn Harriers, what do you think is the main success factor? Because you seem to have had this conveyor belt of talent.
Yeah, I mean, the base, I mean, we've got over 100 years of history now with Blackburn Harriers, and that momentum has been building up for a long time. The track at Witton Park has been there since 1958. It was a very successful track in the 1960s and 70s. The team started to build up from there. We started to build up our coaches and our administrators during that time so that you can have the substructure for a successful athletics club. In fact, any successful sporting club needs those volunteers that are going to put the work in order to create the groundwork for those successful athletes. So, the last 15 years, we've been building up a huge youth and youngster section in the club. And the more you have, the more chance you have to have those excellent athletes that may eventually become international athletes. And we did. We got those three for sure. And many other international athletes who got Great Britain vests and England vests during that 15-year period leading up to the London Olympics. So, but those three particularly shone and made it to that major games, yes.
Well, we can hear from a couple of them now and why they enjoyed their time at Blackburn Harriers so much. An Olympian who plied her trade at Harriers is the current British record holder for hammer, Sophie Hitchin.
Oh, they're just a great club to be a part of. They're very supporting, and even though, you know, all three of us, we don't really train at the club anymore, but we are still part of the club and they still support us, and they're a great club to be a part of.
Sophie Hitchin, the hammer thrower, Holly, the pole vaulter, and then myself. And I think they give you the opportunity to find what you're good at. Like, Holly was a hurdler to start with, and then there was like a try-out session for pole vault. Obviously, she turned out to be amazing at it. And I think they just, yeah, it's a really friendly club, really like nice atmosphere, and yeah, give you the chance to see what you're good at and sort of nurture you in that direction.
The voices of Sophie Hitchin and Alison Leonard, who is the 800-metre runner, and obviously she's hoping to get to Rio this time around. What does it make you feel when you hear praise like that for your club?
It's lovely to hear. I mean, we all know these young women very well. They're fantastic role models for all the youngsters in the club. And all the youngsters in the area, all the youngsters nationwide, you only have to listen to them and look at them and see how they train and how hard they train to see what can be achieved. And this is what youngsters need. They need role models in order to sort of guide them for the future to grow up and become the athletes they want to be themselves. So they're all intelligent girls, very articulate. Listening to Alison there, she's the one additional Olympian that, who knows, we may have at Rio.
Yeah, because she was so close to qualifying for the World Athletics Championships in Beijing. She just missed out, didn't she?
She was. She competed for Great Britain in the European Cup and then came very close. I think she was third ranked in terms of times. And she just missed out. I think Jenny Meadows, just on the selectors' pick, decided to pick Jenny. It was a little bit controversial at the time. We hope there won't be any controversy this time. I know Alison's been training hard, both in Britain and abroad. And who knows, she, as I said, might be that fourth Olympian for Blackburn Harriers.
The voice of Tony Wood, chairman of Northern Athletics, with me, Hannah Lupton, on BBC Radio Lancashire. You're listening to the sports panel. Just a reminder of the trivia question for tonight. Five track and field athletes have won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year since 1990. Just have a go. Can you name them all? 81333, put Lanks in front of your message, or you can tweet us at BBC Lanks Sport. It was interesting, Tony, listening to Tony Minicello, obviously the coach of Jessica Ennis-Hill, and he said that he noticed a character trait in her very early on when she was 8 or 9 years old, and how competitive she was. Even if they were playing cards and it got really heated, she absolutely hated to lose. Is that something that you've noticed with the Olympians coming through? You can spot it quite early on.
Very much so. It's how they, you can see it down at the track or in the throwing circle or on the pole vault runway. You see that competitiveness. Some of them are multi-eventers. So at an early age, we would encourage them to try a number of events. As Alison said about Holly, she was a hurdler to start off with, but she could throw the shot. She could sprint, she could high jump, and eventually went to pole vault because she was a gymnast, and that created that sort of environment for her to be able to be successful at pole vault. Sophie Hitchin, a sprinter, her father was an English school winner at sprints, so she was very quick, so she could sprint. she could throw a number of implements, but she concentrated on the hammer. So, you know, there are two athletes who can turn their hand to a number of things. So you spot that competitiveness. They don't like to lose. They like to win all the time. And, you know, as they grow older, they begin to specialise. And it's then the job of the coach to be able to focus that that competitiveness to get the quality performance at the right time. So, yes, we do spot it. Sometimes we have to sometimes try and curb it a little bit because, you know, they do get down once they've perhaps they've lost in a race or lost in a competition, not thrown as well as they could be. So, you know, there's that downside where they sort of say, why did that happen? And the coach then and even the club have got to sort of gather around and sort of say, look, you know, you're only as good as your last competition. Get to the next one and hopefully it'll be okay. So it's great to see that motivation inside them, that willingness to train hard when other people won't train, you know, so not necessarily on Christmas Day, but on Boxing Day and on the day before, you know, I'm out training, where are the others? You know, it's a drive that's in them and you do see it, and it's wonderful to see that that passion within that athlete, yes.
It's a big part of actually managing that competitive edge though, isn't it? When you've got people who are throwing the proverbial Monopoly table over, it's all about curbing that as well, especially when you're going through those teenage years.
Yes, very much so. I mean, in as they get older, you see it in all sorts of sports. Psychologists coming in to try and develop that that focus that they need and to cut away the bad bits and encourage the good bits. And it's not something you would do with a youngster. You wouldn't get psychologists involved with young children. But you've, as a coach, you've got to try and make them at times see that it's beyond that particular competition or beyond that day. You know, it's a bigger picture. And eventually it clicks and they continue to work hard and get that success, hopefully.
But part of what we've spoken about already with these athletes who are competing at the highest level in sport is raw talent, natural talent, and how we curb that, but also facilities when they start and they're able to try a variety of different sports. And that's what Harriers offers, doesn't it?
It does. All these top athletes strive for good facilities. You know, in distance running, they will sometimes travel into Africa, go to America, so they get with the right squads, sometimes the right coaches. Facilities in terms of the climate, you know, is it warm? Can they train throughout the year? That sort of
thing.
Something
they probably can't get in Lancashire.
They can't get that in Lancashire, not at present anyway. But with something like high altitude training, which they might get in the Pyrenees, they may get in the Alps, they may go down to South Africa and get that. So those facilities are fairly unique and they have to often go to other parts of the world to be able to get that. But on a local level, the striving is also trying to get the right facility in the local area so that the 14, 15, 16-year-olds who are the future can perhaps train indoors, have the right coaches, the right equipment, etc. So at Blackburn Harriers, the fantastic thing that's happened, and we can call it in effect a legacy from 2012, but it required the commitment of the Borough Council as well to combine with that 2012 legacy, as well as the Borough Council, to build an indoor stadium, which we've now done. So we've got a 60-metre track, 20-metre runoff, so the hurdlers can go in there and the sprinters can go in there. We can high jump in there. We can use those facilities when it's wet and horrible outside. We can lift weights. We can do all sorts of things. We can video athletes hurdling, replay it back, show them where they're going wrong. So it's a tremendous facility. It's rare, but we have it in Blackburn. And other Lancashire athletes can come into Blackburn and use it, and we encourage that. So we get people from around the county and the northwest coming to Blackburn Harriers at Witton Park using that facility. And of course, the fantastic facility outdoors as well. So it's great.
Well, that was the buzzword very much, wasn't it? Legacy, the London 2012 Games. We'll hear more from Tony Wood on BBC Radio Lancashire. We'll also be talking to Holly Bradshaw.
Hannah Lupton on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Good evening, welcome along to the Lancashire Sports Panel. Pleasure to have Tony Wood from Blackburn Harriers and Chairman of Northern Athletics alongside me in the studio. Also asking you on Twitter and on the text if you think London 2012 has inspired you. Do you think there's been a legacy left in Lancashire? Scott Slater on Twitter says, London 2012 inspired a lot of people to get out on the bike. Personally inspired me to work a lot harder on my own sport. He's an amateur triathlete. And Derek Webster says, no. Sorry, I haven't. Well, Derek, there's plenty of sports for you to get involved with. Maybe have a pop down to Blackburn Harriers as well, Tony.
Yes, they're all welcome. And yes, triathlon is a fantastic sport and many have turned to cycling and the bike. And I agree with that, yeah.
Well, we've mentioned her name already on the programme, and we're delighted to say that British pole vault record holder Holly Bradshaw joins us on the line now from Cardiff. Good evening, Holly.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, when you say there's less than 6 months to go until the Rio Olympics, how does that make you feel?
It's mainly excitement. Like, there's a little bit of nervousness about it, but mainly excited. Like, I absolutely loved competing in London, and the experience and the vibe that I got from it was like nothing like I'd ever experienced before. So I'm really looking forward to getting out there to Rio and, yeah, just soaking it all up again. I mean, I've been at World Champs before, but the Olympics is something different.
And at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, you came seventh in the final, didn't you, last year? It was a tremendous season for you, considering the amount of time you had out, 16 months with that back problem.
Yeah, I mean, I was really, really chuffed with how I performed at Beijing. I was initially just happy to get out there competing with the best girls in the world and be at another major champs. And I'd had a bit of a bumpy ride over like the 2 years leading up to that with injury after injury, and just to be there was amazing, and then to perform and actually come seventh was amazing. I mean, going into that competition I was ranked 25th in the world, and then to you know, compete and be out there and actually come seventh, you know, I think I outdid myself, and I'm really proud of that.
And I'm joined by Tony Wood, a man you know very well from your days at Blackburn Harriers, in the studio as well.
Yes, very well.
Yeah, hi Holly.
Hiya.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good, good.
So it was actually at Blackburn Harriers that you first started pole vault, wasn't it? You just gave it a go.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of started Blackburn Harriers. I remember the day like it was yesterday. I remember I had a meeting at Blackburn and Harriers, and I'm meeting at Preston Harriers, and I went, it was Blackburn that I went to first, and I loved it so much, and everyone was so friendly. I was like to my mum, I don't even want to go and see Preston Harriers, I just want to come here because it was so friendly. And I remember, you know, competing for a couple of years, doing the high jump and doing the hurdles, and that was awesome. And then, yeah, if it wouldn't have been for Blackburn Harriers putting on the taster sessions, you know, I might never have even got to do it, which is a bit frightening. So I'm always so thankful that they, you know, put on them taster sessions.
I think, Holly, many of us remember that particular night when you you walked across from the hurdles across to the pole vault, and I remember the comment that the coach said on that particular night that you could be a natural at it. So hence you stayed there. So we're all pleased that you did.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the night as well. And I remember Julian saying like, oh, I was the only one there for every one of the sessions. And I just remember picking the pole up that we had and just flinging myself and just enjoying it. And I knew from that moment that I loved it and this is what I wanted to do. And yeah, I am thankful to everyone at Blackburn for whoever put them on, because, yeah, like I said, I might not be where I am now without that.
Now, we're all, as you know, we're all very proud of you, Holly. And I suppose we'd just like to ask, how's training going at present? And, you know, what sort of progress are you making over the winter training?
Yeah, my training's going really well, actually. I started my winter block in October, and I had a solid 2 month stint before flying out to South Africa, which was awesome. I got some really good training done out there and been vaulting really well, working on some technical things. And I know there's been a couple of people wondering why I'm not doing in the indoor season, but a couple of years ago, I don't know whether you remember, I tried to go on these longer 460 poles and go on the 16 step run up. And last year when I was in Beijing, I was off a shorter run and shorter poles. So I really feel like to give myself the best chance of winning a medal at Rio, I need to be on this longer run and these bigger poles. And if I do an indoor season, it takes away from the gains I can be making on my technique using these longer poles. So I've really decided to focus and channel all my energy into dialing it in to give myself the best chance at Rio.
Yeah, that sounds really sensible, Holly. And I know it's because of an injury, or at least a minor injury, we think Jess Ennis has got. But of course, she's opted out of the indoor season as well. And it means you're able to focus for Rio, of course.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's difficult being an athlete that has the opportunity to do it indoors. And I love it so much. It's always, yeah, of course I'm doing indoors. Why wouldn't I? But actually, the big picture is always the outdoor season and always the World Champs or the Olympics. So I feel like people who, you know, like 400 meter hurdles or Sophie in the Hammer, who don't have an option during the indoors, they get a really good block of training and come ready for the outdoor season. And I feel like although this year I'm not forced to do it, I feel like it's a really strong decision to give me the best chance, which, yeah, I feel it was hard to make the decision because obviously I love competing, whether it's indoors or outdoors, but I think it's the right one we've made.
Yeah, I think in athletics, you know, people out there sometimes don't appreciate that what you have to do for indoor season is have a block of training before the indoor competition. And that's often different to the block of competition you would have prior to the outdoor season. It means there's a break in the 12 months. So the training block is split rather than having a complete training block that leads up to one set of competitions in the summer. And it's sometimes really important to, rather than have a break and have to do indoor competition, to be able to run all the way through, which is what you're doing, Holly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's always tricky to try and get a double peak in a year, which is what, you know, you want to come out and peak for the indoors and then you got to settle back down and then come out and peak for the outdoors. It's much easier just to do a single peak in the year, which is another reason for doing it. It just, yeah, like you said, doing the competition season indoors means you have to back off the training quite a lot to make sure you're quite fresh. And that means you don't get necessarily as much gains as you potentially could be. And I know it's a hard decision for some athletes to make whether to do an indoor season or not, but I think, yeah, many people this year, like you say, Jess Ennis, and I've spoke to quite a few people who, I mean, Adam Jamili's doing a couple of races but not focusing on it, just mainly to test the fitness and see where they're at. I think it's a good decision in an Olympic year to maybe miss out the indoors.
And Holly, you don't just owe your career and your sport to Blackburn Harriers, but your husband as well, is that right? Is that where you two met?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I remember seeing him down at the track before I even knew him.
We need some romantic music playing in the background.
He was like, I was just kind of like a young junior athlete going to events, wasn't really amazing in anything, just would just do the high jump and the javelin and the shot put. And I remember he always like specialised in the 800 metres, and I always saw him run around the track, and he was like the big dog at Blackburn Harriers. And I remember like looking at him and being like, whoa, he's so good. And then a couple of years later, like, it's weird to think that there's pictures that we look at where we're like, there's one picture where there's a team photo where we've won the Northern League and I'm kneeling down at the front and he's directly behind me, but we didn't know each other. We'd never really spoken other than saying hi. And it's weird to look back at that photo now and think, oh my God, like we're married. And in that photo, we didn't know each other. It's really strange.
That's so strange. I hope that's up in your house somewhere.
No, because it's a terrible photo of me.
Is this right that you were proposed to after that Olympic final at London 2012?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I came out of the stadium, kind of was going out for food with my family, and yeah, he proposed to me then, which was amazing.
So such a topsy-turvy day, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like I was a little, it was like the emotions were running so high from being, you know, in my first Olympics, being out there with the crowd, and then to get proposed to, it was emotions were all over the place, but it was such a memorable day and it'll literally stick with me for the rest of my life, obviously.
How do you think the run-up to the Rio Games compares to the Olympics in 2012, Holly, in terms of your preparation and being able to peak and perform in that final? Because you pole vaulted 4:70 in the World Athletics Championships last year. Are you confident you can do that again?
Yeah, definitely, if not much higher as well. I mean, in the lead-up to London Olympics, I was still a really young athlete. I mean, I was 20 years old, just was having fun with it. I'd been in the sport for like 2.5 years, so to be in my first Olympics was, I didn't really know what to do. I didn't really have any experience, and I was just going with the flow, really, just enjoying it. Whereas now I'm a much more professional athlete. I've got so much experience under my belt. I know what to expect, and I'm in a really good position at the minute. And I feel like all the things I've learned from being injured, although I don't ever wish that upon myself, I've learned and grown so much. And I just showed that with my performance at Beijing last year. And I'm just looking forward to, you know, that paying off and everything that I've learned paying off. And the run up to Rio hopefully will go really smooth, and I'll get out there and be really professional and hopefully perform and be rewarded.
And one final thing, I'm not sure if Tony's aware of this, but what's this about a Lego obsession?
I know. I think while I was injured, I was kind of like, didn't really know what to do. And and Paul bought me, on our wedding anniversary, he bought me the wedding set I built. And then since then, I was literally obsessed. I've got so many models. Like, I can't even begin to tell you how many hours I must have spent. But I just love it. I'm like a little kid obsessed with something.
It's quite therapeutic, actually, Lego, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really therapeutic. And it fills quite a lot of time. And I like flicking through the book, and then when I see like the masterpiece at the end, I'm so chuffed. It's like a little, like, I don't know, reward, like I've achieved something.
Have you built anything Olympic themed?
Well, actually, my mum did this thing for Christmas this year where she bought me the Eiffel Tower, she bought me Big Ben, and she bought me one other one, something in New York. And basically they came on the front of it with a date and a height that I jumped, and I had to guess before I opened it, what city it was in, and they're kind of relating to where I've jumped. Like, I've jumped obviously in London, in New York, and in Paris, so they're all relating to that. So hopefully I could, every time I jump in a new place, I'm going to get a new Lego model.
Oh, you need to get a bigger house with all this Lego, Holly.
I know, I really do.
Oh, but a pleasure to have you on the Lancashire Sports Panel. I know Tony's really enjoyed speaking to you as well. He's sat here with a big grin on his face.
thank you for having me.
And best of luck with training. We'll catch up soon.
All right, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, Holly. Bye.
Bye, Holly.
Oh, she's not just an Olympic hopeful. She's a medal contender this year, isn't she?
She is a medal contender. I think, it was a fantastic achievement for her seventh in the World Championships. But I think we've got to put that into context. I mean, obviously, the injury that she'd had over 18 months, this was really her first block of competition. And there weren't many before that World Championships. But that position could easily have been a fourth position. It would have looked even better. I think it's on count back. That's how that worked out. So it was really almost a fourth place in that World Championship. So to do that, it was incredible. And, I know that she's been relatively injury-free since then. And I think this decision not to do an indoor season is a wise one. And hopefully she's going to be in great form for Rio.
Yeah, because after having such a long layoff with that back problem, she knows her own body now. She's much more aware of what training she needs. And she's got a good team behind her as well.
She's got a fantastic team, and she's now aware of that issue that she had. I know she had to work incredibly hard to remedy that problem, and some of the training that she had to do in order to get over that back problem was quite considerable. So she's done well.
Yep, Tony Wooden, and a pleasure to speak to Holly Bradshaw on BBC Radio Lancashire. You're listening to the Lancashire Sports Panel. We want to hear from you tonight. We've got our trivia question, of course, as well. 5 track and field athletes who've won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year since 1990. Just have a go at naming them all if you can. 81333, put Lancs in front of your message, or you can tweet us at BBC Lancs Sports. We also want your opinion on whether you think there's an Olympic legacy left in Lancashire since the 2012 Games. Douglas McCann on Facebook says, yes, the London 2012 Olympics inspired me. I watched the Olympics on TV and thought I could be doing more. Now I watch wrestling, boxing, darts, kayaking, skating, gymnastics, sailing, surfing. I call it couch potatoing. Well, there's something out there for everyone, isn't there, Tony?
There is.
Right, so another one of your athletes, it's like the conveyor belt, the generation game of Blackburn Harriers Olympians, yeah, isn't it? Modern pentathlete Samantha Murray from Clitheroe won a silver medal at London 2012, and she's spoken out about her concern of the Zika virus. The outbreak of the disease is carried by mosquitoes in South America and is being linked to severe birth defects. Brazilian authorities insist there will be no risks to athletes and spectators except pregnant women when the Rio Games take place in August. past. But last week, the World Health Organization declared the virus a global public health emergency. That puts it in the same category as Ebola.
Yeah, it is a bit scary and daunting when you're, you know, looking on the news online and on TV and these images, these poor mothers and their babies with this problem. I mean, I think everybody, it puts fear in everyone. But as an athlete, you get quite used to travelling around all over the world where you're exposed to risk of infection and viruses, and we're always given expert medical advice. And we have been assured by experts and people from Team GB and the BOA that everything is being done to understand this virus better and to prepare us as a team when we go out to Rio.
That was modern pentathlete Samantha Murray. It is a concern, this, Tony, isn't it, the Zika virus?
It's a big concern on the back of problems such as Ebola. Samantha's right to highlight that. It'll be a concern for all the athletes we've been talking about tonight, the GB team and athletes around the world. I know the Kenyan athletes have recently come out and said that they have concerns. I mean, there they are in Africa with all the problems they've got in Africa, and they've expressed some concern about this. And it's particularly a concern for women and those that may be pregnant. It needs to be controlled as quickly as possible by the Brazilian authorities. I know they say they're trying their best to do it, but one hopes that the International Olympic Committee will keep a very close eye on this over the coming months. And Samantha, who expressed herself very well there, again, she's fully aware of international athletic affairs, being involved in the Modern Pentathlon Association. She's involved in a variety of sports within that modern pentathlon, and she in particular will be aware that those athletes need to arrive in Rio, not be worried about these sorts of issues in order to be able to perform to their absolute limit.
Because one of the main problems as well is that there's a lot of mixed messages coming out about this. We don't know if people won't be affected, if they can go, but then they'll be affected for 2 months, 2 years. There's a lot of mixed signals, and especially if you think, for pregnant women, when that people are looking to have a family, the year after the Olympics is the time to do it, isn't it? If you look at Jessica Ennis-Hill, she had her son Reggie straight after 2012.
It's this dilemma that the athletes have, all the athletes in all the sports, the biggest opportunity they may ever get in their life to compete in an Olympics, sometimes a one-off opportunity, balanced by the possibility that they may be infected by this mosquito that's carrying this virus. And they need as much support as possible and as much advice so that they can make an informed decision before committing themselves. I'm sure all of them will want to be there, but the risks need to be fully explained to them.
Yeah, it's not just the athletes as well, it's the coaches and the media and spectators and everyone going out there. But it is a case of health over sport in this instance, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Right, so we've heard from Holly Bradshaw there, and we're just going to speak to Bill Bailey, who presided over the Great Britain handball team at the 2012 Olympic Games and now works with Badminton England. Good evening, Bill.
Good evening.
Pleasure to have you on the Lancashire Sports Panel on BBC Radio Lancashire. We're just reflecting back on the 2012 Games, Bill. How was it for you? Because it's the first time that they'd had a handball team for GB.
Well, I mean, I think, no, obviously, you know, being at a home games was, for me, was a real experience. I mean, I mean, the only way, every time people ask me about it, I just kind of sum it up saying, well, actually, it was a bit mental, you know, because... You could be walking through the village and you could be bumping into, you know, people that you're used to watching on TV. But from the sports perspective, it was a good introduction to handball to the UK public for us, and I think that was always the plan.
And yeah, as you say, it was a good window for handball, wasn't it, the London 2012 Games? But both men and women's teams lost all the games at that Copper Box Arena.
They did.
So was that an opportunity missed, or is it a kind of chicken and an egg situation where if you don't have funding, you're not going to get medals, you're not going to perform?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were thankful for the money that we got. at that particular time. But, you know, really, we were a sport that was kind of thrust into the, you know, into the limelight in terms of, you know, the league structure at the time wasn't very strong. You know, we had a Sporting Giants campaign to try and identify, you know, suitable athletes, you know, with the right height requirements and the right pedigree. So there was a lot of things that we had to put in place. And really, you know, not to take anything away from the men's and women's squads, I mean, I think they were at the best that they possibly could be, you know, considering we took another funding cut in the middle of that preparation programme.
And obviously after the games, Bill, you were blown such a big blow in that all your funding was cut. You had almost $3 million and that went down to zero after the London 2012 games. There's not going to be a team representing in Rio. So where does that leave you?
Well, I think the London games, you know, if I say so myself, you know, handball's been a true legacy sport in terms of the selling point for the London Games, because, you know, we've seen a massive growth in school handball, you know, where during the, you know, in 2012 we had 35 schools played in the schools competition, and last year we had 600 schools competing in the competition. You know, so we've had a massive growth at home. You know, we've had a massive growth, not necessarily in clubs, but certainly in teams that are playing. And there's a lot more, you know, when you look on, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that, there's a lot more pockets of the sport going on in friendly tournaments, like in the northeast, in Yorkshire, you know, where traditionally we never really had a foothold in handball. So on that perspective, it has been good for the sport at grassroots level. But in terms of performance, you know, the last games that the senior men's team played in were after the Olympic Games, and we'd already committed to that. So we kind of tried to compete in them with the funding we were used to. And really, you know, that lack of funding and lack of, you know, being able to prepare properly for the games, it really did show. But when we look back, if we try and take any positives from it, the results weren't as bad as they would have been, you know, 7 years ago when we were used to no funding, you know. So so there has been, I think there's been a definite change and a shift in the coaching environment and the players, you know, themselves, you know, having a realistic approach to what it is to become an elite handball player.
Sorry, should have said, Bill, for those listening who haven't witnessed handball, can you just give us a brief description of what it looks like?
Well, I mean, it's essentially, it's seven aside, but it's like football with your hands is the easiest way. It's an indoor sport. It's certainly one of the fastest sports, you know, played indoor. And it's a full contact sport as well, which is, you know, where we can attract, you know, in my experience with the Sporting Giants campaign, the best kind of talent transfer of, you know, this transference of skills came from rugby players coming into the sport of handball. So that, you know, there's that physicality there, you know, kind of linked with a dynamic player, maybe basketball players, but essentially it's about running, throwing, jumping, you know, key skills for kids when they're at school.
And that's why you will have seen success at school levels. I know that U Clan, the University of Central Lancashire, started a handball team since the London 2012, the U Clan Scorchers, but it's successful at the university level as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a massive growth. I mean, we still haven't kind of broken into the Bucks type of support, but we're kind of knocking at the door with them. But, you know, I think at the last university championships, there was something like 80 teams represented, and that's due to grow again this April. And, you know, two of the players that I coach from Warrington Wolves Handball Club actually go to UCLan and play for that, you know, that team. And, you know, they're making good progress. And it's certainly an area that we want to develop. But like everything else, you know, you've just mentioned there about funding. If we could break through that door and get into a Bucks-supported sport, then we'd sure it would go to the next level.
I mean, your hands are tied with having no funding, but also because it is a minority sport, isn't it? And the market's so competitive. So whilst you've been exposed at the Olympic level, other sports have as well. So you're competing in a very busy market there, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. You know, there was a radio commentator from Scotland, actually, who pinpointed he'd been over in Germany to cover one of the football matches, and it got some exposure to handball. And his opinion was that if England and Scotland had a, you know, if football was a summer program sport, he's of the opinion that, you know, handball would take off in this country. You know, we'll never be able to compete with the likes of football, rugby, cricket, and all those big players. But no, we're not in the market for competing with them. We're in the market of trying to offer an alternative. You know, and with the weather here, you know, a good alternative indoor sport.
That's a very good point. I've got Tony Wood with me in the studio as well, Bill, chairman of Northern Athletics.
Yeah, good evening, Bill. Handball, it was such an exciting sport at 2012. I remember watching it, and it is sad that the funding stopped. And, you know, we find it in athletics. I mean, thankfully, the funding for athletics, both development and elite, is still very good, mainly because at elite level, we're getting podium finishes and medals, and that guarantees you funding for the elite athletes. And in terms of development, you know, the number of athletes and people taking part in active running, etc., means that we get money for development. Is that the area that you possibly could get money in terms of the development, the numbers that you're talking about through the schools? If that can be argued in front of UK sport, that's a possibility there for certainly some more funding for handball.
Yeah, I think, you know, the England Handball Association and the Scottish Handball Association, they both receive funding from Sport England and Sport Scotland. But it's fundamentally that funding is, like you rightly pointed out, is for the development of the sport at grassroots level, you know, developing a coaching workforce, you know, and all other arms of any sport that you need to have in place. And there's a small part of that budget that can be used in talent identification. And really, no, personally, you know, England Handball Association has done a great job in terms of they now have five regional academies, and they're producing, you know, a lot of good players coming through the system. The problem we've got is the aspirational side of it, you know, because although we have a Super 8 with, you know, some very good clubs in it, essentially those clubs are dominated by, you know, European players that are, you know, living in this country. And so the opportunities for them to break in there, and then with no funding for the national teams, then the British Handball Association has to really think carefully about entering any teams into events, because the consequences of having to pull out because of a lack of preparation are far greater than the money you would use up in trying to prepare for the programme.
Bill, just explain a little bit about what you're doing with Badminton England as well. What's your role there?
Well, my official title is Senior Coordinator for the Performance Centre. So essentially my role is to look at I think it's currently 35 performance centres that we have throughout England, and looking at, you know, what they're doing to produce performance. Are the performance environments correct, you know, for us to produce talent for Badminton England? Each of these performance centres, they have three levels of in the performance pathway. We have raw talent that comes in, and then it progresses hopefully through to development and then on to emerging talent. And then from that point, if they start to tick all the boxes, they'll move into the England performance training programme. And then, no, the next steps after that are to try and push themselves into the world-class programme.
I wonder, Tony, if you and Bill will come across the same kind of problems with trying to grow the sport in your roles.
Yeah, very much so. It's the task of England Athletics to provide the environment for development within the sport, both in terms of coaching officials and athletes at grassroots level. So, yeah, I suspect Bill in both badminton and handball will have the same issues trying to create that excellent base that's necessary. And at some point, those athletes hopefully will emerge to become international athletes at those sports, and then the argument for funding becomes so much stronger. I think you have to have those grassroots numbers to get the excellent athletes out of that, and in turn then make an argument for elite funding.
And Bill, just finally, from your work with badminton in the Northwest, are there any names that we should be looking out for?
Well, I mean, like I say, I mean, no, we're probably, you know, the level of players that we are looking at would be aspirational players towards Tokyo. But certainly from an England perspective, you know, I think that if there's any if there's any medal hopes, it's going to come from the mixed doubles and the Adcocks. You know, their world ranking at the moment is 5, so it looks like they'll definitely qualify for Rio.
Just won the national championships at the weekend as well.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, and then we've got a number of others that are, you know, knocking on the door. I mean, it's quite, the qualification for the Olympic program is, you know, slightly more complicated than, you know, normal world championships, because, you know, every one of the continents has to have representation there. So it's not always, you don't always get it's not as clear cut as having the best 16 players there. It's the best ones from each of the regions. So getting your on the road to Rio can be quite challenging for some of the players from Europe, you know. So, well, no, let's say we've got Adcocks there, and there's a couple of singles players that are on the verge of qualification, as well as a pairing in the men's doubles. So, but the level that I work with, you know, with the Northwest Performance Centres, their aspirations will probably lie in Tokyo and beyond.
But Bill, thank you very much for taking the time out to join us on BBC Radio Lancashire, and good luck in the coming months. We'll catch up soon.
All right, thanks very much.
Hannah Lupton on BBC Radio Lancashire.
So time to close the trivia question for this evening. We've been asking you to name the 5 track and field athletes who have won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year since 1990. Now, Andy Stout on Twitter is at BBC Lanx Sport, by the way, is the only one who's got it right so far from what I can see. Tony Wood, do you care to give us any guesses for this one?
Yeah, I think we've got to, I think probably Jonathan Edwards, Kelly Holmes.
Correct.
Christine Ohugu.
No,
she didn't get it.
Not on the list.
No.
Sports Personality of the Year.
Yeah, she just missed out. As Jess Ennis, I think, has
she's
just missed out.
She's not on the list
out.
Either.
Yeah. I had two others, but they've slipped my mind just at present.
Okay, I'll run through them quickly. So these are the 5 track and field athletes who have won the Sports Personality of the
Yes.
Year. We've had many runners-up, but this is since 1990. Liz McColgan,
yes.
Linford Christie, Jonathan Edwards, Paula Radcliffe and Dame Kelly Holmes.
Yeah.
So thanks for getting your trivia questions in tonight. And that's the problem when you put on the spot, Tony.
I put on the spot, yeah. Perhaps thinking of other things, yeah.
Okay. So every month on the Lancashire Sports Panel, we'll be working our way through the A to Z of sports and going round various Lancashire sports clubs throughout the year. So we've begun with A, and we've gone for archery, Tony. I think that's a good place to start, isn't it? Now, the Bowmen of Pendle and Salisbury have over 130 members, and I paid a visit to them last night to find out why a few of their members picked up a bow and started shooting arrows.
I just like aiming for a goal, then I just show off to all my family.
I like aiming for the goal, so it's like you really want to aim for the goal and do as best as you can. It's pretty tricky, but you've got to adjust your sight and get the style of your shooting right, so you're able to hit the gold. If you get the technique right, you've got the style right, so you can shoot and like do good, and then maybe in the future go to the Olympics.
Well, archery is all about being focused. To produce a good shot, you have to repeat everything perfectly. To do that takes concentration, takes practice. You know, it helps you relax at the end of a day.
I come shooting because I always wanted to do archery, and I never actually had the time, and I had a few changes and it gave me the time, and I always intended to do it, and I wanted to do something to do with my husband and my daughter. So we joined about 20 months ago and really enjoy it.
I like it simply because whilst you're shooting here, you can't really be thinking about anything else, so you have to concentrate on what you're doing. And that means I can't be worrying about what I've been doing all day at work, so you really have to be able to switch off in order to do the sport. So
it keeps you active in you have to, particularly outdoors, walking. The longest round that's shot over a full day, men will walk about 3 miles over the day, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's with shooting in between, and they pull quite a heavy weight as well. So it keeps you physically fit, mentally alert.
I was at another club, so I've been doing archery for quite a while, a couple of years. Looking at the facilities here compared with the club that I was at, the facilities are much, much better here, with the capability to shoot outside and come whenever you want. That really swung it for me.
Overall, the sport has had an increase in participation, yes. but probably the biggest driver to bringing in more numbers is any film that has archery in it. We see a big influx and inquiries and people wanting to join, particularly youngsters. But this is fortunately a very inclusive sport. Our members range from 8 to about 83, I think the oldest one is, and all sorts of ability. You can have people with disability shooting on the same line as people who are fully able-bodied.
We have a club member here who only joined 2 years ago and she's shot for England. So it's quite possible to start from nothing and end up on the England squad, and she's currently trying to progress to the Olympics.
Many thanks to Ben, Lucas, Melanie, Craig, Paddy and Diane from Bowman of Pendle and Salmsbury for contributing there and giving me a bit of a masterclass in archery. Have you ever picked up a bow and arrow, Tony?
Not in anger. No, I don't think so, no.
It's interesting that they said there that the Olympic Games had a bit of an impact, but if you put Jennifer Lawrence in the Hunger Games, running around forest shooting, that also gets the youngsters involved.
Yeah, I suppose Robin Hood does
the
same.
It's a Robin Hood effect,
well. Yeah, of course, yeah. Anything that publicises sport in that way is a good thing.
And just finally, Tony, you've had so much success in bringing through young talent at Blackburn Harriers. You've now got a much wider remit with your role as chairman of Northern Athletics. But what do you think the legacy of London 2012 is?
The legacy of London 2012 has got to be inspiration. Inspiration for athletes who were growing up at the time of the London 2012 and now are perhaps moving into their later teenage years and perhaps on the verge of becoming international athletes themselves. And as well as participation. You know, the numbers that participate in sport are now fantastic. So let's hope that's the legacy for London.